Chapter 45, Haggai's Encouragement to the Temple Builders. Different indeed was the actual condition of the Jews in Palestine from the great hopes which the exiles in Babylon had cherished. The little community of Jews had been endeavoring to get a footing for themselves in their dismantled city of Jerusalem and in their devastated country. If we can imagine a city laid in ruins by the ravage of a conqueror, and then remaining in ruins for 150 years, the lifetime of 4 generations, we can imagine the situation that confronted the Jews who were trying to rebuild their national fortunes. The rubbish still lay in the streets. The broken stones and the burned ruins of the temple were still a hopeless heap. The palace of the king was part of the common ruin. The gardens and farms round the city had lost all their beauty and were gone to weeds and thorns. The terraces upon which the vines were grown, which were so large a part of the prosperity of Judah, had been washed away. Commerce had passed by the dismantled city and had found richer places for its markets. It was no wonder that discouragement lay very heavily upon the Jews. Cyrus had given them permission to return to their homes and to rebuild their temple, but the physical difficulties had taken away all heart. Of course, the first responsibility that was before these people was to provide for the care of their families. The ground had to be plowed. The crops had to be raised. Simple provision for living must be found. There was not time to think of building a costly temple when the people had not even huts to dwell in. And so the first religious fervor had passed away. But through the vigorous efforts of ambitious men, eager to make a living for themselves, the country soon underwent a change. They raised their crops, they pastured their cattle, they reconstructed their vineyards, and they built themselves better homes than the temporary huts which first sheltered them. Business began to revive in the city. As one man and another became more prosperous, he would clear away the rubbish from sufficient space and would build himself a good house in Jerusalem. So by the time King Darius had succeeded to the throne, there were a good many Jews in Jerusalem who were living comfortably and whose houses were amply and even elaborately constructed. But still nobody thought about the worship of the Lord. To be sure, the sacrifices were carried on in a meager way. There was the altar which had been erected in the temple courts, upon which the animals could be slain, but no effort had been made to rebuild the temple. There had been a good excuse at first, for the people were too poor. But excuses very easily perpetuate themselves, so even after a measure of prosperity returned, they still shrank from the labor and cost of building the temple. If anybody suggested that the house of Jehovah should be restored, the inevitable answer of his neighbors would be, "Oh, we must wait. We have not money enough. We are not numerous enough yet. It will be a great undertaking." Selfishness is always belittling. For a people to be careless about their religion and about the dignity of their worship was to make their whole life sordid. Even from the point of view of their material prosperity, Jerusalem needed the temple. As long as that lay in ruins, there was a sense of failure and of humiliation. No Jew could lift up his head and feel that any of the old national greatness had come back, as long as there was no place for the worship of his God. With every people, it is the institutions that minister to the life of the spirit that are the most important marks of civilization and advancement. There were some men in Jerusalem who felt very keenly the disregard of their people for the house of Jehovah, and one of them was Haggai. He was sure that no blessing would come as long as the people were wholly concerned with material things and had no interest in their worship and their faith. He believed that the hope of the Jews was in the building of their temple, and he saw that unless something vigorous were done, the people would go on in their selfish, easy way, shirking the great task. Haggai therefore waited until a feast day should bring the people together, and then went out into the marketplace and spoke to them his message. "Thus speaketh Jehovah of hosts, saying, This people say, It is not the time for us to come, the time for Jehovah's house to be built." These words were only an echo of what had been heard often enough, but Haggai was prepared to follow them with a very definite rebuke. He declared to the people that they were not receiving such reward of their labors as they ought to receive because of their carelessness about the temple. Is it a time for you yourselves to dwell in your sealed houses while this house lieth waste? Now, therefore, thus saith Jehovah of hosts, consider your ways. Ye have sown much and bring in little. Ye eat, but ye have not enough. Ye drink, but ye are not filled with drink. Ye clothe you, but there is none warm. And he that earneth wages to put into a bag with holes. It was a long time since any prophet had spoken in Jerusalem, and the people were always stirred by the earnest words of a man who had convictions, so they drew nearer to listen to Haggai. Thus encouraged, the prophet flung them a challenge. Thus saith Jehovah of hosts, consider your ways. Go up to the mountain and bring wood and build the house, and I will take pleasure in it, and I will be glorified, saith Jehovah. Haggai understood the ground upon which he must appeal to his countrymen, and so he repeated the warning that their economy had really been waste. Ye looked for much, and lo, it came to little, and when ye brought it home, I did blow upon it. Why, saith Jehovah of hosts, because of my house that lieth waste, while ye run every man to his own house. Therefore, for your sake, the heavens withhold the dew, and the earth withholdeth its fruit. And I called for a drought upon the land, and upon the mountains, and upon the grain, and upon the new wine, and upon the oil, and upon that which the ground bringeth forth, and upon men, and upon cattle, and upon all the labor of the hands. Among those who listened to Haggai's words was the high priest Joshua, who ought himself long before to have stirred up the people. Another was the governor of Jerusalem, Zerubbabel. This man was the direct descendant of Josiah the king, and if there had been a monarchy, he would have occupied the throne. But the Persians had not permitted a Jewish king to reign, and had granted to Zerubbabel only the office of governor. Under the leadership of these two men, the people responded earnestly to the prophet's call and declared themselves willing to undertake the work. Haggai, greatly encouraged, brought them the word of good cheer. I am with you, saith Jehovah. Then a great revival of interest took place in Jerusalem, as everywhere was manifest the activities of the temple builders. For a month the earnest work went on, while Haggai encouraged the people with constant promises of future glory. While these events were occurring in Jerusalem, mighty happenings were stirring the eastern world. A series of rebellions against Darius made it very uncertain whether he would establish himself upon the throne. There was great uncertainty concerning the future. The prophets always believed that they saw the hand of God in these political occurrences, and Haggai, with great joy, looked forward to the time when, in the shake-up of the nations, there should come a new prosperity and independence to Israel. The little temple that was being erected, so different from the noble structure of Solomon, might seem insignificant, but Haggai believed that the God of the earth would yet bring such prosperity to his people as would make it possible for a glorious house to be erected. It was at the time of the Feast of Tabernacles, when the temple building had been going on for about a month, that Haggai preached his great sermon of encouragement. He declared that the political disturbances in the east were a part of the shaking of the heavens and the earth by Jehovah's might, and in them was the promise of blessing to the Jews. Pathetically, he contrasted the rising temple with the older structure, but splendidly he looked to the future glory. Came the word of Jehovah by Haggai the prophet, saying, Speak now to Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, governor of Judah, and to Joshua, the son of Jehozadak, the high priest, and to the remnant of the people, saying, Who is left among you that saw this house in its former glory? And how do you see it now? Is it not in your eyes as nothing? Yet now be strong, O Zerubbabel, saith Jehovah, and be strong, O Joshua, son of Jehozadak, the high priest, And be strong, all ye people of the land, and work, for I am with you, according to the word that I covenanted with you when ye came out of Egypt, and my spirit abode among you. Fear ye not. Yet once, it is a little while, and I will shake the heavens and the earth and the sea and the dry land, and I will shake all nations, and the precious things of all nations shall come, and I will fill this house with glory. The silver is mine, and the gold is mine. The latter glory of this house shall be greater than the former, and in this place will I give peace. The clearing of the rubbish and the preparations of the temple proceeded so rapidly that within 2 months more, amidst solemn rejoicings, the foundation was laid. Haggai, of course, preached a sermon on the occasion. As before, he bade the people recognize their ineffective attempts to improve their condition. They had never prospered as they had hoped. Misfortunes had come upon them. The prophet reminded them that this was because of their carelessness for their religion. But now that the foundation was laid, all would be different. And now I pray you, consider from this day and backward, before a stone was laid upon a stone in the temple of Jehovah. Through all that time, when any came to a heap of 20 measures, there were but 10. When one came to the wine vat to draw out 50 vessels, there were but 20. I smote you with blasting, and with mildew, and with hail, and all the work of your hands, yet ye turn not to me, saith Jehovah. Consider, I pray you, from this day and backward, from the 24th day of the 9th month, since the day that the foundation of Jehovah's temple was laid, consider it. Is the siege yet in the barn? Yea, the vine, and the fig tree, and the pomegranate, and the olive tree have not brought forth. From this day will I bless you. So stirred was Haggai by the fact that the temple had started, and that the news from the east indicated critical political changes, that he preached another sermon on the same day. This time it was directed to the governor of Judah. With scarcely concealed purpose, the prophet dared to point out Zerubbabel as the man who might bring about the independence of his people. Evidently he hoped that with the breakup of the Persian Empire, it might come to pass that this descendant of David should sit upon his father's throne. As a matter of fact, Zerubbabel was not great enough for such a task, and Darius the king soon proved himself superior to all his enemies. But it expresses the prophet's undying faith in the God of all providence, as he brings the word of Jehovah, "Speak to Zerubbabel, governor of Judah, saying, I will shake the heavens and the earth, and I will overthrow the throne of kingdoms, and I will destroy the strength of the kingdoms of the nations, and I will overthrow the chariots and those that ride in them, and the horses and their riders shall come down, every one by the sword of his brother. In that day will I take thee, O Zerubbabel, my servant, the son of Shealtiel, and will make thee as a signet, for I have chosen thee, saith Jehovah of hosts." We have nothing more from Haggai. Doubtless he stood beside the people and encouraged them through the trying months of the temple's progress. But it was another prophet, Zechariah, who spoke the great words that belong to its completion.